I have now turned cassette number 4 over to the B side and will back up the big tape a little ways so there will be some overlap.
I didn't get it in school. So when we talk to inspiration, and I guess we do talk with has strength, power of language, and one thing or another. You take the scriptures, for instance. Seems to be the words in the scripture are the greatest literature that there are in the history of the world. And those men who spoke by the gift and power of the Holy Ghost, why, those words are just, that they spoke were just out of this world. And you can see that it comes from a higher power. So you don't always have to have school training to be able to teach and to preach.
It helps, huh?
Oh yes, it helps grow
up. The next place is up in the 18th ward, isn't it?
Yeah, let's see what else we can do down in Marriott.
That's all.
I guess that's all.
What did you do in Marriott, Mom? Weren't you in the primary?
Sure, I was
in the primary at the time. Then walked and wheeled Albert that mile and a half in the baby buggy up to primary. And I think I was present with my aunt and my aunt Marriott once too at the time. I was staying out there.
Well, I can remember
I've held about every office in the church that a woman can hold. I've been president of the Society, president of IMIA, president of Sutner, and then counselors and secretaries, and on genealogical committees. Well, after all, when you get to 72, why, it isn't difficult to say you've held all those offices.
Where were you British Society president? Which was?
Well, it was out in Marriott too, wasn't it?
Relief Society.
Oh, in the 18th
ward. 18th ward.
I wasn't present. I was counseling Margaret Compton and Margaret Todd. And then, No, I wasn't in the president. I was in the presidency, but not present.
In the 18th ward, I was a ward teacher. I was on the home mission. I taught in Sunday school. And I was one of the 7 presidents of 70s in our quorum in 18th ward.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Salt Lake and was set apart for that as one of the 7 presidents of 70s by Revadger Young.
Mm-hmm.
So I had quite an experience in the 18th ward when we was living here before. When we moved to the 24th ward, I was a ward teacher, and I was a teacher in the high priest group of the 24th ward. And then I got set apart as on the senior running committee. So that took me away from the high priest group meetings altogether.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have meet together on other church duties. Senior Ronnie.
I
worked at that for 7 years with Brother Lawrence Moore. Senior Ronnie Committee of the Ward.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a long time.
I believe we've done a lot of good
job. Yeah, I've
done a
good job.
Of all offices I've held in the church, the teaching jobs have been the most rewarding.
Yeah.
I don't care for executives.
I don't either. I like
I don't
teaching
like
jobs
it.
The best.
I'd rather not.
They keep making me an executive, and I'd rather be a teacher.
I'd rather be a teacher.
When I was
you learn more. You gain a whole lot more teaching.
It's a lot more rewarding.
There's so many little things come up in executive jobs that are disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
At times that you can't avoid.
When I went to work with Brother Moore says, Brother Hawley says, when we visit these senioronic members, we'll never mention the word of wisdom to them. So there's many other things we can talk about. There's many good things in the gospel to talk about. We don't have to harp on them word to word. And he says, that's not the only thing in the gospel. I says, I realize that, but I'll never mention it. So we never did, unless they brought it up themselves. They know they're failing. There's no use saying anything about it.
They think more of you, too, if you don't
harp on it. Mm-hmm. So we go into the home. Tobacco smoke is so thick, he cut it with a match, you know, and he put his arms around these men and make friends with them, be their friend.
Mm-hmm.
He sure had a wonderful way with him. Sure liked him.
Mm-hmm.
He gave him their love, you know, for him, and they sure didn't like him very much. Now the committee had, I think they had a half a dozen teachers on the committee, and we were the only two that done any visiting in the ward.
Mm-hmm.
So we done our job well. I'm glad that he was the leader. I don't think I'd get out as often as he did. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll be ready anytime you call, Brother Moore, and he'd call a couple of times a week for me to grab him.
And then they always went into the drugstore and had nice food before they came home. They still like to do that, they think, to step in and have a dish of ice cream. He's a fine man.
You know, those men, if they get active, why, they just forget all about their tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And if they drank it, they get all about all the liquor and tobacco, and they let us know about it. We'd never question them about it. Sure, a wonderful way to work at with them. You don't have to be harping them about that, about their failings.
Well, now, how about this mission that you went on to Colorado? Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, that was the crowning point.
Yeah, that's the crowning point of our missionary work, of our church work.
We thought all the rest was really wonderful. Mm-hmm. But you have to get out in the world making church to put something in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was the most wonderful experience.
Yeah, it sure was a wonderful experience.
You're really alone. You're on your own there.
You really are.
There's three other mentors, and you're alone.
Of course, the presiding elders visit you once every 2 weeks. And then they come from Denver and visit with you.
Once a month.
Those are thrilling experiences when brother meet with you.
We look forward to those times when there's some, you know, that were members to come and stay overnight and meet with us and talk with us.
Well, talk about your call and where you went.
And we went to Ouray, Colorado. That's southwestern Colorado. It's in the Switzerland of America, in the tops of the Rocky Mountains. Ouray is 8,000 feet elevation, surrounded by mountain peaks 12,000 to 13,000 feet high. And it's a beautiful place in the summertime.
And you wild recall flowers. To preside over a branch of the church there, consisting of three towns.
Yes, it's called to preside over the branch. I was president of the branch, and once was the Relief Society president.
Well, that's where you were Relief Society president, Mom, and all right.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's the closest to me.
What time, when did you go there and when did you leave?
We arrived there on the 18th of December 1958, and we took over December the 22nd. That was on a Sunday, 1958. Brother Jones, district president, came from Naderita to make the changeover. Brother Beck and his wife had charge of the branch at that time. They were residents of Mesa, Arizona. And we took over on the 22nd, and from that time on, we just worked with all our might to accomplish something. We didn't get any converts. We done proselyting, and
we didn't baptize anyone, but we left with a good many people knowing about the gospel, and they may come in later, mm-hmm. take a little longer. We weren't there long enough to bring them in.
We proselyted in Ouray, in Silverton, which is 34 miles south of Ouray, elevation 92,050 feet. To go there, we had to go over the Million Dollar Highway over Red Mountain Pass, 11,018 feet elevation. Then we went north to Ridgeway, 10 miles, to cross the light there.
We visited every home where they would let us in, and you rang, knocked on every door. It's a Catholic community. Two-fourths of the inhabitants are Catholic.
Three-fourths?
Yes, three-fourths.
Are Catholic. And there's other churches there, half a dozen. For such a small town, there's a church on about every corner.
Mm-hmm.
Methodist, Presbyterian, oh, all kinds of churches. And the Catholics predominate. And their members have had orders not to let members of our church inside of their house. If they are, they have to pay a penalty. And you can't get in their house. They stick their nose out the door. We say, yeah, we're missionaries representing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. May we come in and have a few minutes of your time? No. You shut the door. You can't get inside the Catholic home unless it's back to the devil. Down in Ridgeway, we knocked on the door. A lovely home, large home. Little boy, Silverton. A little boy that didn't know any better opened the door and just come in. So he went in and he went out in the kitchen and told his mother, and she came in and Howard introduced us. We're missionaries representing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. What, Mormon? And she threw up his hand. Oh, what did you let him in here for? Now I'll have to give the father $15. And she showed us right out.
As she said, she'd have to pay down for the priest first coming in her home.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's his condition there.
Mm-hmm.
And President Romney, when he visited down there, he says, I can see that that's not good territory for proselyting. It just isn't. It's small, you know. 8,000, is it?
No, not 8,000. 800 or 900 people.
And they're mining, miners. And many of them don't care about religion at all, kind of the rough people. But they were very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was polite and nice. They all recognized us on the street. We dressed a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And they were polite in the stores. And everywhere we went, they just, well, they wanted their trade. They wanted us there. And they did let Howard speak before the Rotary Club and put articles in the town paper. And, well, they spoke to us on the street, always.
Oh. When did you leave your mission and come back home?
23rd of August, 1958.
Mm-hmm.
We landed your place on when? 23rd or 24th, wasn't it? And we left there on the 26th. We got home on the
26th.
Mm-hmm. While we were there at you're right, I went to the Rotary Club secretary, Mr. Hickey. He's a lawyer, and I asked him if I could talk to the members of his group. And he says, well, I'll see about it. He says, the other ministers have spoken to us. He says, I don't see why you shouldn't. He says, I'll have to see about it. And he says, talk to us, I guess, speakers about 3 weeks ahead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I'll let you know. So things went on for 3 months. I didn't hear from him. So I stopped in front of his, had the inspiration to stop in front of his place one day to see what was the matter. And well, when I stopped the car, my girl came over me. I was afraid to go in there. I thought, this will never do. And boy, I couldn't get out of that car fast enough. I practically ran into his office. And the secretary says, well, Mr. Hickey is busy, Mr. Hall, but you'll be able to see him in about 10 minutes. I don't think it'll be over 10 minutes. She says, just be seated. When you take a seat and wait for him? I said, yes, I'll wait. So, you know what happened when he came out? About 10 minutes, he came out of his office, and I stood up, and he shook hands with him, gave me a hearty handshake. He said, Howard, have we got a date for you on the 26th of May? I think it was the 26th. He says, we'll meet on that evening at the Beaumont Hotel. That's where we meet. And you can be our guest speaker. Come at 6:30 for dinner. We have dinner at 6:30, so I got there at 6:30. Had dinner with them. Every one of them smoked. Mm-hmm. Some of them smoking cigars and pipes and cigarettes. And when the waitress was bringing the coffee, I turned my cup over ahead of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if she wasn't satisfied with that, she would pass me up. She says, "Mr. Hall, would you like to have some coffee?" I said, "No, thank you."
Mm-hmm. But we worked hard in all those times.
I said to Mr. Ricky, I says, "Well..." Well, he says, "Well, just tell us in a general way about your church." He says, "Don't say anything about religion." I said, "Well, I can't possibly say anything about our church unless I tell you how it was organized." And he says, "All right, give him the works then." And I did. I talked to him for about an hour and told him about the organization of the church. Father and the Son and the Angel Joseph Smith, and Angel Moroni, and Angel John the Baptist, and Peter, James, and John, and about the president. Organization of the church. How that we had prophets, seers, and revelators today. David Joel McKay was a prophet, seer, and revelator. And I talked about the MI organization, about the priesthood organizations. And I guess there wasn't anything that I didn't leave out. And they sure thanked me from the top and appreciated it. After we got outside, a Catholic talked to me for 30 minutes.
Wouldn't let
him come home. Tell me about the wonderful organization of MIA, the cultural part of it, and the choirs, and the athletics, and everything. The Salt Lake Tabernacle Choir.
Mm-hmm.
And he could tell me all about it. And I want to know why he wasn't the one. He said, "Oh, I'm a Catholic."
That settled
the whole thing. Controversy. And then I went to the URA Auto Court and was able to put Books of Mormons in there. Something had never been there before in any of them places. Then I went to the Croft Auto Court and put in Book of Mormons there. 14 courts. I put in 14 Books of Mormon for the courts and one for the manager.
Mm-hmm.
It's 15.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to the library and got permission to put the Book of Mormon, Doctrine and Covenants, Cradle of Good Christ, and What of the Mormons in the library there.
Uh-huh.
And Mrs. Crooks was librarian. She said, "Yes, you can put them in." So they're supposed to furnish them if the libraries will accept them. Well, I wrote in about them, and time went on and on and on. I thought, "Well, I'll get the books myself. I can't wait any longer." So they might change their mind. So I went and got the books myself and ordered them from Denver and put them in. I put in 2 Books of Mormon, Pearl of Great Price, Doctrine and Covenants, and the book What of the Mormons by Hinckley.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name, first name?
Byron
Hinckley. Then the Secretary Minister there, and I started with him first. At first they wanted to tell us off, but they changed their mind about it.
The large tape, reel number 2, ended at this point. So I will now go to reel number 3 and start recording at that point.
Today is June 27th, Saturday, 1959. I'm at the home of my father and mother, Howard Hall and Florence Hall, and I'm going to see if I can get some more information on this tape. Dad, why don't you tell me about when you were herding cows for these other fellows when you were a youngster?
Yeah, it was about 1899.
How old were you? About
10 years old. And I started herding cows for Bugs Burt and Dick Richards. In those days, the people in Ogden had a milk cow. And these milk cows were herded on the Weber River bottoms in the summertime. And I worked for Bugs Wirt and Dick Richards herding the cows and watching them in the river bottom, and then helped to take them home in the evening. He left the responsibility up to me most of the time while I sit in the shade taking it easy at 28th and Pacific. Now, these cows were taken down 28th Street across the Union Pacific tracks through the river bottoms.
Whose cows were they? Were they their past cows or lots of people?
They belonged to the people of Ogden. The families in those, the people in those days had a family cow. And,
You mean they were being paid to take care of the cows, but they were subcontracting it to you?
That's right.
How much do you think they were getting paid a day for it?
I don't really know what they got a month for the cows.
How much did they pay you?
They paid me 50 cents a day. I think they were getting in the neighborhood of $2 a month for each cow.
About how many cows were involved?
So they had 100 to 150 cows in the herd.
Quite a responsibility for 50 cents a day. You said you rode their pony to herd the cows?
Yes, Bugs Wirt had a bay pony with a white face. I got a lot of enjoyment riding bareback on that pony and herding the cows. I thought that was really fun. And I remember one night I had trouble with the cow getting it home on 26th Street where the Schoolcroft home was. It's the Myers mortuary now. And I had real trouble with that cow getting on the lawns, right all over the shrubs. But that's, I believe, the only trouble I had most of the time. When you get the cows to their home, well, they'd just go right in. That's all there was to it. They knew where they belonged.
What time in the morning would you get the? Would you go pick up the cows at the homes then in the morning?
No, they would pick them up in the morning. Bugs Wirt and Dick Richards would pick up the cows and bring them down. And
what time of day do you think they'd do this?
They'd get them down there by between 8 and 9 o'clock every morning to the river bottoms.
And then you'd herd them during the day?
I'd herd them during the day and round them up in the evening.
What time in the evening?
I think it was about 5 o'clock to get them rounded up, to bring them back home.
What time would you get the last cow back home?
Well, it generally took about 2 hours to get them all put away.
And then someone in the family milks the cow.
Yeah, sure. That's right. Seemed like anybody else knew it but the Chinese at that time.
Dad, you told me on the last tape something about you working at the Utah Canning?
Utah Canning Company.
Now, where was that plant located?
29th and Pacific Avenue.
Still in
the same place. I believe it was the first cannery in Utah. It was called the Pioneer Canning Company at that time.
Well, now you're telling me how they put the cans together.
You used to have Chinese solder the lids on the cans. They were the only ones that knew anything about it at that time, how to do that job. So they were considered experts at that kind of work.
Were the metal cans built about the same as they are today?
No, the tin cans were soldered in those days, not a day. Pressed together.
And just a mechanical crimping. Did they have a soldering iron?
Yes, they had a soldering iron.
How long would it take them to solder a can shut?
I don't know. I didn't see the process of the canning going on. Of course, that went on after the cans got away from the pillars and into another room.
Why don't you tell me something about your early railroading days and when you first went on the job as a fireman. Was that the first job you had after you were a call boy? Was it a fireman on the railroad?
Yes, it was fireman. Fireman switch engine logging yards, 12 hours a day.
Do you remember the first train you fired on or anything about your first experience firing?
Well, they used to pick on me to go, when they needed a fireman on the road, they'd call on me. And I'd fired lots of engines from Ogden to Evanston while I was still working as a fireman in the Ogden yard. We'd work 12 hours a day, and then us boys, we'd go uptown and have a good time. Lots of times the call boy would catch me uptown. 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening, and I'd go right down and go out on the train, work all night.
What time
did you come? Mom wants to know what kind of a good time you were having uptown.
Oh, we just go to the chili parlors and eat chili, and we'd go down to Murphy's and we'd have Beano's, get a French loaf of bread, pull out the insides of it and fill it with pork and beans, have Beano's and beer. We thought that was quite a feast.
You know us children, grandchildren. We weren't around then.
We didn't know any different, I guess. That's the way we did things. I used to fire on they'd call me generally on a helper engine and go to Wasatch and then turn around and come back to Ogden.
Yeah, where's Wasatch?
Yeah, well, Wasatch is about 12 miles this side of Evanston.
Oh.
That's the top of the hill there. Evanston is about 7,000 feet elevation, and Ogden is a little over 4,000 feet elevation.
Well, you'd probably have to shovel coal all the way on that uphill trip, wouldn't you?
Yes, you'd have to shovel coal all the way. So, it was pretty hard work.
Yeah.
And you'd have to get water and coal at Echo, use up the tank of coal by the time you got to Echo, and then you'd have to use another tank of coal from Echo to Evanston.
How many tons of coal would you shovel on that run, do you imagine?
Oh, I imagine they shovel 20 ton of coal.
No wonder you're so strong, Dad.
Nobody.
I fired on the Oregon Short Line from Pocatello to Montpelier, and then I went breaking on passenger on the from Ogden to Salt Lake and Pocatello, and then they sent me up on the Montana run from Pocatello to Butte, Montana.
How many years did you work as a fireman before you were brakeman?
Well, I worked about 2.5 years. I worked a year on the a little over a year on as a brakeman.
Is there any seniority, or what is considered the best job here? Is a brakeman supposed to be a better job than a fireman?
No, I didn't consider that. I didn't like that job braking after a ticket. There wasn't anything to do.
Does it pay more money?
No, it paid less money too.
Huh.
So I figured the firing job was the best job.
What's a brakeman supposed to do anyway?
Well, the rear brakeman's supposed to act as a flagman, and in case you stop over So over 2 or 3 minutes, you got to get out and flag the rear end of the train to protect it. And now if the train pulls into a siding, you've got to line up the switch after you pull out of the siding. The front brakeman opens the switch to let you in on the siding, and the rear brakeman closes the switch after you leave the siding.
2 brakemen on a train?
2 brakemen on a train.
Is it still that way today?
Yes, still that way now. Firemen don't have anything to do on a diesel engine, so the railroads call that feather bedding now. The firemen, of course, can look out for signals. I think if anything went wrong, the engineer got sick, well, the fireman could take over. Take over and run the engine, or if he couldn't run it, he at least stopped the train.
Would the firemen run the old steam engines at all? Or would the engineer do all the running of the engine?
He'd do all the running. I remember